In this week's episode of Movie Wallers, we talk about The Moment and Scarlet. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you.
You nearly caught me out.
I did catch you out.
You literally timed it so I put like a delicious bite of this mango crack cake that Yazdi has introduced us to now.
It is.
My mouth.
It's a very good cake. But coming from somebody who doesn't love cake.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's like a mawa cake you get in India, but it's got mango bits and it's called mango.
So tell our listeners what we're eating. So we're at Yazdi's. Yazdi always has the best snacks, as we've talked about in the past.
Well,
and Yazdi, what have you given us today?
I've given you individually wrapped little mango cakes, which comes with an otherwise unrecognizable Chinese name. It's from Costco. Costco has this because it said mango. I got it on a whim and then I love them. And this is my second box.
How many in a box?
46. I don't know.
And when did you buy them last week?
No, I bought the original box was 2 months ago and then I saw it again and I got it.
Oh my goodness. Yes. They're very good.
Mango crack cakes. They're very good. Yeah.
Yes.
Because they're more like,
they remind me of, pineapple cake.
That's what I was going to say. The moon cake. Is it called pineapple during the moon festival?
Almost. Maybe it's
the Lunar New Year
it's
tomorrow.
It's Chinese Lunar New Year tomorrow. And maybe that's why it's there. And maybe it won't, maybe I should buy 5 more boxes before it goes away.
Yes, can you buy me some?
Are you serious?
Seriously, I'll happily take a box.
Okay, done.
Well, thank you, for the cakes, Yazdi.
Yes.
We're here to chat about a couple of movies, just a quick note, listener note, sorry for our sound quality over the last couple of episodes is not what it used to be. I'm still futzing with our new setup. I will get there.
You will.
I've got the equipment, I just need to use it right, so apologies.
The sound may be futzworthy, but they're super convenient. They're like little things you wear, you can barely see them, and they're like, you don't have to worry about the mic getting in your face and all of that stuff, so We'll get there.
But thank you for your patience as I try and work out these technical issues. Hopefully the podcast is not unlistenable. If it is, let me know and we might have to go back to our other setup. But for now, I will keep trying. So just a little production note and thank you for all of your listening patience. All right. So we do have time today to do our segment of I can't find anything to watch on video on demand. This is where we tell you.
Yes.
Noteworthy things to watch on streaming because, we often find ourselves like through too many services, too many offerings, and then we end up watching something we watched before.
Yeah.
Instead of watching something new. So this is to help you out of that trap.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm actually going to go to Paramount this week.
Oh, Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus. And the reason I'm going to Paramount Plus is because I normally would recommend The Gilmore Girls, which I just watched from season one all the way through to the end of season seven. It took me about, I think I started in December. November or December.
I love it.
And I've been making my way through.
We should add the word again.
Again, which I love.
Your third full run.
Yeah, I think it's my third full run through. But I didn't do a year in the life. I couldn't do that one.
Which would be post.
The one that came 10 years.
Post-network TV.
Yeah, 12 years later.
Was that a movie? Or?
No, it was 4 episodes. Okay. It was called like spring, summer, winter, fall, winter, something like that. Anyway, then I was looking for something more nostalgic. And I remembered that I was re-watching on Paramount Plus Beverly Hills 90210, which is also a show that's very dear to my heart. But as I was there, I just saw the movie. It's a movie from 2005. But it's the movie Just Like Heaven, which stars Reese Witherspoon and the Hulk, Mark Ruffalo. And it's this beautiful, Yazdi, I'm going to predict you would love it. It's kind of, it's not quite romantic comedy, But it's this lovely little movie about Reese Witherspoon, who plays this executive and ends up having a car crash. And she's essentially dead. And she meets Mark, and she meets Mark Ruffalo, and it's kind of
wait, in the afterlife?
Well, I'm not going to say anything. So
you just said she died. Anyway.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So it's just this really cute spiritual movie, but it's kind of fun, and it's got romantic moments, and it's got comedic moments, but it's not a romantic comedy.
What's it called again? A Day?
Just Like Heaven.
Just Like Heaven. Okay.
Yeah, and lovely little movie from 2005.
2005.
So yeah.
20-year-old.
Yeah, but it stands the test of time, and it's just a lovely, lovely, lovely movie. It's like a hug. Yes, I'm going to predict you're going to love
it. Okay, yeah. Very young Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But it's cute. It's really, really cute.
Okay.
So Paramount plus Just Like Heaven.
Okay. My recommendation is also from a different source. It's from YouTube. And there was a documentary which released earlier this year called The Librarians, which I really wanted to see. It was in theaters very briefly. It was at the Digital Gym, and then it disappeared. KPBS bought the rights to it, and KPBS is showing it right now, but it's also available for free on the KPBS YouTube channel, and it's called The Librarians, and it's about banned books, which is one of my favorite topics. And, you know, obviously it's a highly politicized issue, but, and, you know, I clearly stand very much against banning of anything, but how eye-opening it was for me was to see that so many of the people, the talking heads, had to sit in the dark while talking because they had threats for their life.
Gosh.
That, you know, they had, you know, people were, and there's such an, on, you know, politically on the other side, there's such a strong, well-funded effort to ban books that, you know, librarians have lost jobs, they've had to resign, you know, all this stuff. So it's a topic which is very close to my heart. I don't say it's an exceptional documentary. It's very linear, it's very simply made, but it's if you care about this topic, then it's amazing. It's just like 90 minutes long, not even that. So The Librarians, full documentary on YouTube, definitely worth watching.
I'll check it out. I love that you had a YouTube pick.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if you could send me the link, I will put it in said show notes. And that way, if you want to catch this movie, you don't have to search for it. You will go to movieworldlife.com, click on it, and it will play right from there.
Excellent.
I'm going to go with a movie that I'm championing from last year. It's a polarizing movie. We got to see it as a screener because it kind of came and went without fanfare. But it's a movie that's just lodged in my brain. Rashmi, you're going to hate me for it. The movie is Die My Love. This is the Jennifer Lawrence vehicle from last year. She was put up against the guy from Twilight.
Pattinson.
Robert Pattinson. In, you know, again, I think we talked about it not so long ago in the podcast, so I won't revisit everything we said, but director Lynn Ramsey has a very strong auteur voice in this. It's a very, very specific kind of filmmaking. You will either get on with it or you will hate it. So send the hate mail to Rashmi. I'll take the thanks.
Yeah, don't expect like a full plot. It's more of a feeling of this person descending into madness. But it's we talk about brave performances. This is truly a brave, unhinged performance from Jennifer Lawrence. I think you may have your opinions about the movie. Sorry to hijack your movie, but I think Jennifer Lawrence deserves a spot in Best Actress category this year for the Oscars for
she
this
got
movie.
Robbed, right?
She got robbed. She wasn't.
She get robbed.
And instead, we have Kate Hudson.
Yes.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which again, none of us have seen that movie yet, so we can't really speak
Song
about
from
it.
Blue. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, again, I didn't love the movie. I didn't hide that when we did the show. But I did think both performances were excellent. So regardless of whether you love the movie or not, it's worth seeing for the performances. And I would describe it as mother light.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those.
That's the issue I had.
Motherhood crisis genres,
but
it's not really specifically about that. But Okay.
And also Lynn Ramsey has been making movies forever. She made We Need to Talk About Kevin, which we all loved. You can tell she kind of makes movies which are very visceral and very, you cannot walk away without having some reaction to them.
Yeah. And the reason it's on my recommendation is that it is lodged in my brain, this movie. I can't extract it. I think of it from time to time. So yes. That's On the Service Mubi, M-U-B-I. If you're not subscribed to Mubi, which I don't think many people are, I think it's one of the more niche services out there. They had the Demi Moore film from a couple of years
ago. Correct. The Substance.
Substance. If you haven't seen The Substance, check that out. But you can get Mubi for 7 days for free.
Yeah.
If you haven't got a subscription to it. So check it out, because there's some good stuff on there. And these two movies are...
Both of them are worth watching.
Even if you click past the days and pay for a month, I think you'll still have your money's worth.
$7 or something. There's another movie called The Mastermind, which I really want to watch, with Josh O'Connor from last year, and it's on Mubi. So I was going to sign up for Mubi briefly, so I'll watch this one as well. Although I've seen it.
Yeah.
Initially. Yeah.
All right. So let's recap.
Go on. Yes.
So mine is Just Like Heaven on Paramount Plus.
Yes, Dee.
Mine is The Librarians, which is on the KPBS free channel on YouTube.
Awesome. And mine is Die My Love on Mubi.com. That's M-U-B-I.com.
Yeah, all on Netflix. It's great.
On Prime.
Yeah, yes. I love it.
That's what the segment is.
Yeah. Hence, we can't find anything to watch on.
Well, Netflix has got lots of series.
We
tend to like that, but.
Yeah. And I was actually going to say, we heard from two listeners, albeit our friends, both said, thanks for the recommendation of Send Help.
Oh.
So our dear friend Michelle said, thanks for the recommendation of Send Help. We saw it last night, late show at 9:30, and I stayed awake through the whole movie. That's great. And our friend Jeannie said, friends, I just saw Help. What a fun movie. Thanks for the recommendation. So we love hearing from you. Please write to us. Yeah.
I think they've got the marketing wrong for that
movie. I do too.
I think it's...
Change the poster.
Yes.
The poster, you can't even recognize that it's Rachel McAdams, and it looks like a bad, B-horror movie.
Yeah.
What are they doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. There's just something... Even the trailers play it much more for horror than... the movie actually is. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too bad. But yeah, if you haven't seen it, go see it.
Yeah.
We loved it. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about other things that we love or maybe don't love. We have two movies to review this week, The Moment and Scarlet.
Or Scarlet The Moment.
Scarlet The Moment. I didn't read our production notes, Rashmi, so which one we're taking first?
Scarlet.
We're going to do Scarlet first. And
go for it.
Last year, on a whim, I went and saw a Japanese animated movie called Mirai, M-I-R-A-I.
Oh, yes.
And that movie just filled me up. And, you know, I don't need further preaching. I already love, you know, good Japanese animation. And the director of Mirai, Mamoru Hosada, has a new movie out, which is also getting a theatrical release. And its original title is Hateshinaki Sukareto.
Well done. Right.
Well done, me.
Well done, Yazdi.
It is 1 hour and 51 minutes long, and the writers are Mamoru Hosoda and Todd Haberkorn. And I think nominally the movie is kind of a Japanese take on Hamlet, which is curious, but...
especially because we just had Hamnet.
Because we've just had Hamnet.
And there is an English version by Riz Ahmed called Hamlet that is
coming out
in the UK... theaters currently.
Yeah, and it's going to be coming to the US too. So the one-liner is, a medieval princess on a quest to avenge her father's death awakens in a realm between life and death, where she encounters an idealistic young man from the present day who shows her the possibility of a future free of bitterness and rage. This movie is currently in cinemas. You guys all watched it. What did you think of Scarlet?
So I will start by saying the animation of this movie is incredible. The depth and breadth, the cinematography, the color, the reality of the world itself is absolutely breathtaking. There's a scene which I was like, wow, this looks like it could have come out of Dune. It was that well animated. So I love the animation. I think the story is good, but I feel like it hasn't necessarily translated from the Japanese language into the English language as maybe succinctly or as emotionally charged as it probably is in Japanese. So I think it loses a little bit in the story. That's not to say I didn't enjoy it. I just think it's missing something to make it phenomenal.
Joe?
Yeah, what Rashmi said really, I mean, I enjoyed this one very much. So I'll start by saying it was a very engaging visual experience. Plot-wise, you know, I really liked our hero. Our protagonist, young Princess Scarlet, was a very, I don't know, just a very engaging character for me. So I really went on her journey with her. But I agree with you, the storytelling is a little muddled at times. And I think things that could have been written for more of a punch don't quite land. So, you know, the sheer beauty of the movie got me. You know, I actually was looking for desktop wallpapers for my laptop because I was like, I enjoyed the artwork so much. So,
yeah, and you are a lo-fi fan.
And sure, I mean, so Lo-Fi Girl is
very,
you know, a Japanese manga / anime / so, you know, yes, I do like that kind of artwork anyway. This is
even more.
This is dialed up to 11. I mean, you could press pause at any point in this movie, print that image, put it on your wall, and you'll have, you know,
beautiful
decoration.
Yesy.
Yeah, it didn't work for me. I can appreciate the beauty.
Yeah.
The animation also seems, and it's this lo-fi thing, it seems a little dated because it's all very flat. We're used to more 3D animation. It almost seems like the background was made first and then somebody came and put characters on afterwards.
I think that's exactly what was done because the background is very CGI rendered.
Right.
But the animation feels hand drawn.
Mm-hmm. But I cannot deny there were parts, especially in the second half of the movie, which were just gorgeous. Like they took my breath away. And like the both of you, I think it's the story. I mean, we know the story of Hamlet. I mean, obviously Scarlet here, it's a gender switch role. But it just seemed all over the place and it doesn't all flow nicely into each other. And I say this because my previous experience with this director was watching this movie Mirai, which literally in the first scene just made a direct line into my heart and stayed there. I was with the little girl in that movie and it was so well paced and focused. And this one seemed kind of all over the place. And like you said, maybe this is some of the mythology is more familiar to people from Japan and maybe it's lost on us. But I mean, anyway, I was going to say something mean, but I won't say it. The other thing which was very curious about the movie is that it makes no qualms about its appropriations. So it's clearly based on Hamlet. So it begins in 16th century
in Denmark. Yeah.
Like, why are people speaking Japanese in 16th century Denmark? Which is fine. It's a Japanese animated movie. But, you know, there is a Yoda-like creature in it who is very wise. There is actually a character called Voldemort instead of Voldemort.
Yes.
And then the dragon ship, the dragon ship looks like the Star Wars battleship. So there, it seems like they're very freely grabbed from a lot of popular culture, which I don't have a problem with, but it just felt very curious. Like Voldemort cannot be thought of as anything other than, you know, a slight change on Voldemort, right?
That's hilarious. I didn't pick up on that, but okay.
So anyway.
Now that you say it.
Yeah. So it's fine. I mean, it's okay. I can say it's like between a 5 or a 6 out of 10 for me. I'll be generous. 6 out of 10. Worth watching at the back of the plane.
Yeah, I think that's a good score. 6 out of 10. I think I had the same question as you, Yazdi. Like, why is this set in Denmark? It's very strange. And I was trying to look for there was another Chinese animation that we watched last year.
Oh, yeah. Nezha. Jena.
What? Yeah. Yes.
Nezha.
Yeah, let's look for the name.
Same issue.
And kind of like that, I think it just, these movies have this problem where they have a really slow start and they're trying to cram so much mythology and background that it moves so slowly. And then suddenly you hit the halfway point and you're like on the ride. So the pacing was a little bit off for me as well. I didn't quite at times understand what was going on and where we were. And there's an afterlife, but it's running concurrently with the present life. And it's got some great I don't want to, like, again, I don't want to give it 6 out of 10 and say it's better than average, because it's more than better than average. Yeah. But there's a lot of, concepts to grasp, and we don't have time or the information to grasp them.
Yeah. And
to make it fulfilling.
Yeah. And to latch onto what you said, there's a whole scene in the afterlife, which is in a desert, but there are camels there and bandits.
Yeah.
It's like, if it is set on planet Earth, in a desert, that makes sense. But if it's in the afterlife, why are there camels there? There's also like a whole Hawaiian dance at one point. So it's just like in Denmark, in Japan, in Hawaii, in Star Wars land, in Harry Potter land.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. But anyway, maybe I sound very critical, but I'm just being observant.
Yeah. I just didn't find it that messy. I think I found it somewhat unsophisticated in its sort of storytelling.
Frankly, maybe that is a very articulate way to put it.
Yes.
No, I mean, I guess ultimately, you know, the hero's journey aspect, right? Like the hardest thing for the character to do that we all know is coming, should hit with force at the end. And we have that kind of gut punch of emotion. And that fell a little flat for me. But again, I was so enchanted, I guess, by Scarlett, the character.
Yeah.
You know, I loved her mission. I loved her purity. I loved her girl bossness.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
She was really cool.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know,
for me. And I loved the ending. I loved the ending. Yeah.
I loved spending time in her world.
Yeah.
With her on her journey.
I mean,
like it's a road movie.
Yeah.
Right? I loved going on that journey with her.
Yeah, and there's this beautiful scene where these stairs are crafted to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
That was fascinating. And then, yeah, it's...
So for me, it's a 7.
Okay.
7 out of 10.
Okay.
You know, I wished it could have been more.
Yeah, it could have been more.
I think all of the ingredients are there. And I literally think by swapping a couple of scenes around, you know, like taking the film reel, splicing it together slightly differently, you would get all of that.
Yeah.
But it's just very linearly told.
Yeah.
And,
And the film I was talking about was Neja 2. Good. N-E...
Oh, no, that was
Z-H-A 2. But I'm just saying in terms of the fact that it was a movie that's very, very mythical and world-based, and things get lost in translation.
I was going to say, that one was culturally very difficult for me as a Western audience member.
Yeah,
very impenetrable.
I didn't understand that movie.
I didn't.
Whereas this one, I was with the story from start to finish. Yeah. It was just...
My only other criticism before we wind this one up is it's very violent. I'm not sure I'd want to take a young child to watch this. I'm not sure it's
PG-13.
But it's very bloody.
It's very bloody. Yeah, it's very gory.
But again, it's animated. Yeah.
It's nothing that I wouldn't think a 13-year-old wouldn't cope with. I think, you know, yes, it's violent, but it's stylized violence. It's, you know, and again, you know, her martial arts and her training and all of that stuff I thought was excellent.
There are even characters called Guildenstern and Rosencrantz. But anyway, we'll let it go.
Yes. Moving along, from this moment to the next.
Okay.
So let's talk about the moment.
Okay, so the moment is, it's kind of marketed as a mockumentary about the pop star, highly popular pop star called Charlie XCX. It is directed by Aidan Zamiri, who's done a ton of her pop videos. And this is written by Aidan Zamiri, Bertie Brandes, and Charlie XCX. And it stars Charlie XCX, and she has help from a few others, including Rosanna Arquette and Alexander Skarsgård, and then a whole bunch of others, including herself. So it says, a rising pop star navigates the complexities of fame and industry pressure while preparing for her arena tour debut. So, Joe, why don't you tell us what you thought of the moment? Because you are the Charlie XCX fan amongst us.
Well, I mean, let me
don't walk it back.
No, let me calibrate that statement, because I mean, am I Charlie XCX obsessed? No, but I came to know her as an artist late last year, where the song Party for You, which is one of her hits from a few years back, actually it was a COVID album, popped up as a recommendation in my Apple Music, and I listened to it and I kind of became obsessed with that song, you know, playing it over and over. And so since then I've expanded into the world of Charlie XCX. So she's, you know, a angry, you know, pop British, you know, dance, you know, techno kind of artist. And I like that kind of music. But am I a huge fan of hers? Hell no. I mean, I don't really know much about her. And I didn't know much about her going into this. So, look, as a film, it kind of pulled me into its little universe quite quickly. You know, it's funny, strange. I think it's operating very much in its own space of being this. It's trying to be, I think, more funny than it is, as a mockumentary. It doesn't quite get away with the full on mockumentary. I think there's inspiration here from The Office and things that we've seen before. But it was very entertaining. I was with the movie throughout, even though I didn't quite know where it was heading.
Okay. Yes, Steve.
So I don't have a single song of Charlie XCX in my music library. Shame on me. But so I came into this as completely the wrong demographic for it. And I was ready to hate. I was ready to hate on this movie. Like, this is what's wrong with the sound like an old, you know, the new generation. But like Joe, even not knowing anything about her, it kind of pulled me into that world. Now, I don't know her real life pop persona well enough to know if the version she plays is similar to it, or if she's playing an exaggerated version of herself, or if she's playing a version which has nothing like her real version. I suspect that it is a little bit like her own version because that's what it starts with. But I have two issues with the movie, which we'll talk later. One, a very good one, and one not so good one. But let's come back to that.
I love this movie. I didn't know anything about Charlie XCX at all. I mean, I'd heard the name. And
the songs in the car.
And the songs in the car, yeah. I love this. I thought it was really funny. It's a very British take on life. So it kind of was fun to be home. And I thought it was really funny. I thought Alexander Skarsgård was fantastic in this. Rosanna Arquette is so funny in this. Charlie XCX is really laughing at herself, which I thought was really nice. So it's just, it's a piffle, as you always say, Yazdi. It's piffle. There's not much to it, but I like the fact that it's really holding a mirror up to the industry and it's,
the absurdity of it.
Yeah, the absurd. Right. It really captures the absurdity. There's a great little cameo by Kylie Jenner in it. It's funny. It kept me engaged and the time went by so quickly. I really enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think the essential tension that this movie is constantly toying with and poking fun at is this kind of dividing line between, you know, what's right artistically and what's right commercially.
Yes.
Right? And she wants to be recognized in many ways as an artist, but there's this commerciality and success and the people around her that just want to make as much money, from this and taking it with, you know, and then there's the Skarsgård character, which, you know, wants to do something very different, you know, and I'm sure there's some reality in some of this. I mean, you know, the album Brat was a phenomenon, especially in the UK. Mm-hmm. I completely missed that party, right? That was, you know, cut a year or two ago. But it was huge. And, you know, she did collaborations and like there's three different versions of that album that are out. And I don't know how much of that was her as an artist expressing herself or maybe production people saying, you got to do a song with Billie Eilish. Billie Eilish is really hot right now. You got to do a song with Ariana Grande. So this version of Brat comes with like collaborations with just about everyone. Maybe she's just that popular.
Yeah.
Or maybe someone is trying to expand her audience. And so I think she's kind of having a moment in my opinion. What the voice that I heard from behind this movie was, you know, kind of help, you know, like this is nonsense. This is bizarre. This is the world that I'm kind of trapped in. And I'm going to show you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to score this?
Well, no, he has had a couple of talking.
Sorry.
My one talking point, I'll get the, and maybe I'm reading too much into this. The one which really bothered me is this is all, it's a piffle, it's a mockumentary and they're making fun of everything.
Yeah.
But there is a very definite turn the movie makes at the end. And I didn't like the message it was sending. We can talk about it later.
Yeah.
Where it's almost because Charlie XCX all along, Charlie XCX, the real person, has been about her individuality and her like You know, I'm
irreverent.
I'm going to do drugs and I'm going to do cocaine and I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to party like crazy and, you know, I'm going to be my own person. And then the movie kind of almost shoehorns her away from that. That's where the whole movie kind of lands at, which kind of bothered me. And maybe that's the joke, is that
maybe
that only in the real world would somebody like Charlie XCX get shoehorned by the culture into doing what the culture is asking her to do. But that kind of didn't sit well with me. Like, why would you make a mockumentary where your identity is kind of erased? And maybe I'm reading too much into it. So that's the thing. The thing I absolutely loved about this movie is that Charlie XCX is a great actress.
She's very good, yes.
I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, I'm sorry to be profane, but she has several roles where she has to sob on the phone and she's yelling at people. And I'm like, she should be in movies. Forget her pop career. And then to my surprise, I found out that she's coming out as an actor in two other movies where she's just acting.
Wow.
So I think this movie more than anything else convinced me that if her, you know, music career doesn't work out, she should totally be doing proper acting because she has to do a lot of heavy lifting.
And maybe that's the point of the movie because she's really worried that Brat is running out. And so maybe this is her jump to movies.
And Brat is the album.
And Brat is the album.
I mean, that's an interesting point. It's always hard to rate someone as an actress when they're playing themselves. It's kind of like Eminem was an amazing actor in the movie 8 Mile. I don't know that I would cast him as, you know, Hamlet in a in a stage.
I would love to see that.
But you know, so I think there's she's advantaged by that. But you're right. I believed her from beginning to end, and there were some difficult moments. Her comedic timing I thought was excellent, and she has that kind of off-camera, she kind of does that nudge and a wink with a facial expression that's kind of, you know, this is weird, right?
She really looks like the Kardashians. At one point I was like, is that Kim Kardashian on the screen? I was like, really? Wow, yeah. Let's wind this one up. Okay, yeah. Joe.
I love that the movie didn't put her up on a pedestal. I was expecting to see something that kind of celebrates her as being this amazing person in the way that so many of these movies does. It felt like a very honest, self-aware take of the chaos that surrounds her, right? I thought it was funny, bizarre in a way that really worked and ended up being a very worthwhile watch. Going into this review, I was thinking a 7, but now that we're talking about it, reminded me of quite how much I enjoyed it. So I'm going to give this 8.
I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10.
Which
I will back down to a 7. But this movie really surprised me because even if you don't know anything about Charlie XCX, the person, I think the movie on its own holds up very well. It's got enough humor and wit and commentary and even the locations, like, you know, as she's jet setting, there's this whole thing about her being in this spa, which is for the very rich. And, you know, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
But for me, if nothing else, this for me is an introduction to Charlie XCX, the actress. And Dakota Johnson is directing her first movie, and the lead is Charlie XCX.
Oh, wow.
Takashi Miike, who is this very famous Korean director who's made the best horror movies out of Korea, has her as the lead in his movie.
Wow.
And there's another movie called Faces of Death where she's the lead actor. So she has 3 movies coming out very soon.
I didn't know that.
I'm glad that for me, it's a very auspicious debut of Charlie XCX, the actress. 7 out of 10.
Yeah, 8 out of 10 because it used Bittersweet Symphony right at the end. And I love that song so much. And to hear it loud in the cinema was just mind blowing for me. Yeah. So 8 out of 10. I love this movie. I think it was just so fun.
Excellent. Yeah, good. I thought it was very well done.
And good for Alexander Skarsgård.
Yes.
He's up for anything.
We'll be talking about him in our next episode.
He was such a comic book villain in this, though.
But was he a villain?
He was
hilarious. He's hilarious.
He brought conviction to the role.
Yeah.
And he sold me on it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
All right. We thank you for listening again. Hopefully we'll get the sound right sooner rather than later. The sound is a little less irritating on YouTube, believe it or not, because the visuals somehow carry
the audio. Irritation.
So do check us out on our YouTube channel. We appreciate that, and give us a like and thumbs up and all of that stuff. We will be back very soon with more reviews, Wuthering Heights and Pillion, in our next podcast. Very excited to talk about, well, the only one of those that I've seen.
Make it a surprise which one you've seen.
So until next time. Too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.
Is that Sawyer?
She's so cute.
Nothing makes Sawyer feel better than people talking. It just puts her in a very safe space.
That's lovely.
She's like, people are talking. All's right with the world.
That's true.
That's lovely.
Ellie does that too. She comes into, like, when I'm on conference calls and, like, you know, my volume is loud and I'm chatting away, cat crashes out.
Right.
Yeah. It's so funny.
Did you see?
I wasn't sure if you'd like that movie.
I loved it.
And it was very, it's a very vanity-free performance as well. I mean, like, she looked like...
She looked like shit at times.
A greaseball at times.
And she's not very tall either, so, you know...
She's not very attractive, but she's attractive. It's weird. She's kind of, like, ugly beautiful.
And I didn't know her mom is Indian.
Yes, Gujarati.
Oh.
Yeah, and she's half Scottish.
Scottish, yeah.
And I was chatting with Esme.
She's like, great.
She's like, great playlist. Oh, this is just the Apple Music Essentials Charlie XCX. And she's like...
Sorry, it's still lunch.
Oh, yes.
Did you not eat any lunch?
It's fine.
He has to eat something.
I will have
quickly, go on.
No, it's fine, it's fine. Oh, I won't die.
1 minute. No. So what Esme was saying is that, you know, and I haven't really paid too much attention to her lyrics. Apart from that one song, but like Esme's like, her lyrics are amazing as well, which I didn't...
Does she write her own stuff?
Yeah, she writes the songs and the lyrics, but she has other people come in and produce the music. There's one song which is like, she did this COVID album, which was really where she went from kind of
like
standard pop,
like computer
standard pop tart
right.
to.
Oh,
she, have you heard the song? I don't care. I love it.
Yeah.
She's on that.
She's on that. Yeah.
That's one of my favorite songs. I didn't even know that was her. Do you want us to turn this off, by the way?
No.
Well, wait.
Angry White Girl Pop is what I call it.
Oh, she's a backup singer and I don't care?
No, she wrote it.
It's a collaboration with
She wrote it.
She wrote it.
It's a collaboration with... I like...
The Yeas.